Reminiscing by Mary Berry Handlin. It's strange how much deeper a gully looks to a child, how much wider a stream, how much higher a cliff. My childhood memories of the old mill site rather dwarfed what I saw on my recent visit to that hallowed place. There was the little dry crevice that once a merry stream tumbled down to become the life of this very small though exciting community. It furnished the steam for the mill engine. It turned the old water wheel, then fell off the end of a little wooden trough that Grandpa had made to keep the water from getting riley, and to make it easier for the women to dip their water. The old mill site seemed to be a little lost valley carefully hidden from the hustle and bustle of the rest of the world. The tallest pines and the bluest sky I have ever seen. The trees and mountains hid the sunset, but in the evening the soft reflection from the setting sun shot a pinkish color across the span of sky, and the beauty of it all gave you warm, happy feeling all over inside. People could sneak in by horseback and surprise the camp, but the rumblings of a wagon over the rocky road could be heard several miles away. Time for the kids to collect and go out to meet them, and time for the women to pause in their day's occupations and gather to give the new arrivals a warm and hearty welcome. The first summer I remember being at the mill, Mother made Effie and I each a pair of bright red Galusha rompers. She figured she could spot us easily if we got lost. One of the uncles remarks, "Why, May, you'll have every bull in the country chasing your kids," kept us hovering each day near Mother's skirts. When a little girl grows up to be 4 years old, she begins to appreciate many things. I found among these new adventures in life were playmates, sunsets, colors, and the taste, feel, and smell of things. I connected people and things so definitely with smells that even now burning chips remind me of Grandpa Whiting and Story Hour, a sniff of the fumes from a smokestack, and I think of trains and the big city of Chicago, the smell of pen gum, and I see Aunt Elda fingering through her coveted collection to offer you a choice piece. The odor of some brands of talcum powder always brings Uncle Frank to mind, and the sweet aroma of horse sweat and leather chaps recalls the uncles in their younger days. One breath of yellow roses reminds me of long ago and Nora. Sitting with Effie and Nora in the shade of a big cottonwood tree, playing barefoot in the damp sand in the little ditch in front of Aunt Martha's house, is about the nicest memory I have. As small fry getting acquainted with new children, Effie and I always ask them three honest, straightforward questions: first their name, then what their favorite color was, and last, what they were weaned on. We were continually annoyed at the number who could not answer the last one. Nora was Aunt Martha and Uncle Frank's eldest child. She was 1 year older than I. They lived in the little blue cottage on the corner in St. John's, where Aunt Zella and Uncle Ralph later lived. I loved to go to their house. It was always clean and smelled of cookies, spices, and talcum powder. A tall copper gallon measure full of beautiful green and blue peacock feathers set on a little round center table in the tiny parlor. Dark green plush portieres edged in ball fringe separated the parlor from the sitting room. Uncle Frank had brought them from England. Upon request, Aunt Martha would let us pick flowers from her flower garden. I always picked the pink ones, Effie the blue, and Nora the yellow roses. We would take them out in the sand and make crowns of them or decorate sand cakes. Once we made a beautiful castle and covered it with yellow roses. Just as we had finished it, a cow came by and stepped placidly in the middle of it. We three sat horrified atop the picket fence where we had climbed to escape the wrath of this great beast. When I started kindergarten, Aunt Martha gave me Nora's coat. It was almost new. I was overjoyed. It was an odd shade of blue, almost a purplish color. It had a big double square collar, the top one being a soft red flannel. There were big gold buttons at the front, on the cuffs and pockets. I thought it was the most beautiful coat in the whole world. The first day I wore it, and came proudly home from school, I found Mother cutting quilt blocks on the table. Aunt Martha was busily sewing them at the machine. At the sight of me, she buried her face in her sewing and cried uncontrollably. Mother whisked me into the bedroom, took the coat off and whispered, "It's the coat, Mares. It reminds her of little Nora." I understood when through the door I saw Mother taken Martha in her arms and comfort her as only a big sister that loves her little sister can. My thoughts went back to the funeral and the little white coffin covered with yellow roses and the young grief-stricken couple that stood out on that windswept hill clinging to each other, as the body of their beautiful little girl was lowered down into its lonely resting place. I wondered how long I would feel the ache in my heart. I'm still wondering because it's still there. All during my childhood, I heard Grandpa Whiting tell stories. My earliest recollections are of when Far, who seemed to be the Paul Revere of the grandchildren, would run the rounds with the exciting news Grandpa is going to tell stories tonight. Be sure and come. Of course, the be sure and come wasn't necessary. Whoever missed a chance like that? The coziest place we used to gather was in Grandpa and Grandma's bedroom, where the old fireplace was. I remember the big fluffy rug, in front of the fire, that Grandma had made of old pants. And the old clock with the big pendulum, that hung on the wall. And Grandma's bright woven bedspread with a fringe, that Grandpa had bought years before from a peddler. But that's another story. Then, of course, there was always the big jar of cookies behind the bedroom door. When I went in that room, last summer, I didn't look behind that door, because even now it wouldn't seem right not to see the cookie jar there. I remember also that in this room was the stairway to the upstairs bedrooms. On many occasions, as I began to blossom, I used to sleep upstairs with Aunt Min. We used to spend a lot of time trying to figure a way to get in and up those stairs at night without waking Grandpa. Only once did we manage it. We had been out late, Effie and Min and I. We had quite a session on the front porch on how to get past Grandpa. We all took off our shoes and left them on the front porch. We spent at least 1/2 hour inching our way up those stairs. We made it. I couldn't believe it. But we made it only until the next morning. Grandpa got up bright and early next morning, and found our shoes on the front porch, and knew exactly what we had done. I remember Grandpa marking Arthur's height on the board trim of the old fireplace with his pocket knife. I meant to look for it last summer. After the grandchildren had all collected and were ready, Grandpa always did one last thing before he settled back in his rocking chair. He picked up a large tub of chips and poured most of it on the fire. This made us all move back and gave him a little more room. Besides the little red men, Break-It Leg, Big Claws and Little Claws, and the wood demon, he told us many true stories about his brothers, and his father and his 5 wives. He told us when he was a little boy and would get hurt, and would run to the first wife he could find. It didn't matter which one, as they all gave him motherly affection. And how when summer came, it would take him only a few minutes to round up a whole gang of boys quite near his own age, and right in his own front yard, to go fishing. When the milk in the little pans would clabber, we learned that this was a true Danish delicacy. One day when we were there, Grandma got out a nice little pan of clabber as a special treat. She sprinkled it with sugar, cut it down the middle, then said, "Now this half is for Kay and Lee, and this half is for Mary and Effie." Kay and Lee started in. I ran out to find Effie. When we dashed back in low, and behold, those two little pigs had licked the whole pan clean. There they sat round-eyed and round-bellied. When we demanded an explanation, Kay took the floor, and with a defense attorney look in his eye argued us down by submitting the fact that not once did he or Lee put their spoons over on our territory. He said, "How could we help it, if your clabber just kept slipping over on our side of the line?" Both Aunt Martha and Mother recently admitted sneaking around in the mission home, and eating clabber when and where they wouldn't get caught, as they knew the missionaries would think they were crazy. Aunt Martha said, "Why, I would rather have a dish of clabber any day than a dish of ice cream." In that east room used to be a lovely corner window with a flower shelf. Tell me, are Grandma's geraniums still there? They were the only flowers we would see all winter long. It was in this room that Grandma set up the big wooden bed the night she brought little Lester home. She insisted Aunt Zell sleep there a few nights so she could keep her eye on him. He really caused a stir. Every woman in town came down and wanted to mother him. I guess Lester was the smartest little kid the family has ever had. Runners-up would probably be Min's Don E., Geraldine's and Willard's Carolyn, and Helen and Aubrey's Lane. Ronald's and Dean's brains didn't show up as children. They had to prove theirs later by their report cards. Before Lester could walk or talk, I have seen Uncle Ralph take a grade school history book sprinkled through with the pictures of great men, open it at random, then ask Lester, which one is General Sherman, which one is Sir Walter Raleigh, Ulysses S. Grant, etc., dozens of them, and Lester would point to the right man and never miss. The old room to the north is where Art and Armina first set up housekeeping. On the walls of this room, separated by two short partitions, was a brown and white oilcloth with checks set at a harlequin angle, and a wider border clear around the room. In those quarters Armina baked her first batch of bread, and was so proud of it she gave it all away. Armina was a mother-in-law's dream. She kept her apartment spotless, and Grandma's house likewise, then fretted around for something else to do. She always had more energy than she knew what to do with. She had been the star basketball player in St. John's High for 4 years. She never lost a foot race in her life. She won every 4th of July race, since she was old enough to run. But Arthur, well, that's a different story. He warmed the basketball sub-bench for 4 years, but for some reason the coach never quite needed him for a game. Then one night we got to see the reason why. After the game was scheduled, there seemed to be a lot of players hit by the flu. The coach started the game with a pitifully small lineup. At the end of the half, who should we see but Arthur come prancing out? He took his place, the whistle blew, the ball went up, and the players raced to the other end of the court. Art was right in there fighting. They raced back again, the whistle blew, Art went out, and so did two others with help. He had knocked out two of his own me in less than 3 minutes and the game was called off. The old front bedroom once got itself papered by Min, Effie, and I. We just got through in time to go to the Vernon Fair with Grandma and Grandpa. And the old parlor, the one in the southwest corner, has it been plastered, too? On the wall of that old room used to be a beige paper with a border of beautiful pink morning glories. Does the big oval gilt-edged picture of the forest fire still hang in that room? Is the picture of the beautiful blonde woman in the long green dress with the bald-headed bay in her arm still there? Is the old red carpet still on that floor? Are the beautiful lace curtains that Uncle Frank brought Grandma from England when he returned from his first mission still hanging at those windows? And the old upstairs. I hope it's still the same. In the winter, a chance to sleep on the old feather mattress that great-grandmother Isaacson had made and between Aunt Elda and Aunt Min was certainly a guarantee against the frost outside. But getting out of bed next morning took the thundering peals of the half-hour bell in the old bell tower by the academy. Aunt Elda always rolled out first. Then Aunt Min would kick us kids out and bury herself back in bed. The old kitchen dash, has it been plastered too? Is Grandma's little spice drawer still hanging on the wall? And the old pots and pans dash, are they still hanging there too? Especially I remember the old hot cake griddle, upon which Grandpa baked the best thin, sour batter hot cakes ever eaten by man, woman or child. They were always exactly the size of a big dinner plate and he always served them with butter and sugar. Sugar to him was a rare delicacy and he never got over fully appreciating its taste. He said when he was a boy the only time he ever tasted sugar was when he was sick. No one ever used it for any other purpose. It was too scarce. His mother kept a little tiny sack of it in her trunk for sickness. The old built-in cupboard in the southeast corner of the kitchen. Is it still there? It was on the top shelf of this one that Aunt Min was reaching one day for one of Grandma's old sad irons. It slipped and fell 6 feet and lit point down on her little toenail. My sympathy goes to all those who have never seen Edmund's little toenail after that accident. The old stove through the years became almost a part of the family. How many Saturday night bathers have warmed their wet and shivering torsos by the tender glow of this old black friend. And the long shiny chrome rod across the front of that old stove has probably, sometime or other, warmed nearly every fanny in town. It was around this old stove Grandpa taught most of his grandkids to build a fire. He instilled in us so strongly the necessary carelessness of having to use more than one match to start a fire that I seldom ever use more. His deep respect and appreciation for the tiny match was born on 3 or 4 mile runs to a neighbor's house, when he was a boy, to borrow live coals, as their fire sometimes accidentally went out. How many loaves of bread, pies, cookies, biscuits and roast venison that old oven has baked no one will ever know, how many kettles of beans, Danish dumplings, sweet rice, red mush, and milk gravy has been cooked on the top of that old stove will never be counted. Grandma claimed that up until she broke her hip, even though Grandpa had died and all her kids were married off, she always baked the same number of loaves of bread and the same size kettles of soup. She said, "Well, if some of the family doesn't drop in and eat it, I like to have a little to take over to my neighbors or someone else." She always felt so indebted to all of her neighbors for their many, many kindnesses, Sister Richie for her many bouquets of flowers, Sister Neagle for her baskets of fruit. She felt so indebted at one time that she stayed up most of the night Christmas Eve making them each a little footstool. The only tools she had was a hammer, a broken saw, and a butcher knife. Sister Neagle told her late she wondered how she had ever gotten through life without that little stool. Is the old barn still standing? Is Arthur's little pigeon house still sitting way up on top? Wasn't it far that Arthur once persuaded to jump off the barn, and though he furnished him with Grandma's best umbrella, we had to dig him out of the pile of manure that Arthur promised would be so soft for him to light in? It was. It was my first experience seeing an umbrella turn wrong side out. And Grandpa's blacksmith shop. He used to let us hang around and watch. We felt it a great privilege to work the bellows for him. He was an excellent blacksmith. The sheriff used to bring prisoners down for him to fit handcuffs to. The old ice cream parlor is always in my fondest dreams. There were glass candy jars all over one wall. A fountain graced the opposite side with a big mirror flanked aloft by the busts of 2 Indians, male and female. Just what these 2 Lamanites had to do with the artificial palm tree and the rest of the decorative scheme of things I will never really knew. A fancy partition of stained lattice draped with long dangly green portieres separated that part from the place where customers came to partake of the best ice cream in town. 2 mirrors placed exactly opposite each other enabled us to see endless reflections of ourselves. In this alcove was a number of round ice cream tables with heavy wire legs and chairs to match. No doubt many can recall the little children's table and chairs exactly like the big ones. Dad made the first bottled soft drink in town, and everyone brought their best girl in for a drink of Herbert soda water. There was a choice of one flavor dash strawberry. I also recall when a bottle he was corking exploded and hit him in the chin. He still carries the scar. Whiting's Ice Cream Parlor was simply the most exciting place in town. Aunt Elda was in full bloom, and though still a teenager, she seemed to have every situation well in hand, including us kids. In the middle of a good loud scolding for us to get out of that way and mind our own business, I used to marvel how at the sight of a prospective customer or an eligible swain, she could keep from dropping the inflection on the last word and continue on with, "Hello, what can I do for you today?" As light and airy as Lady Vanderbilt herself. I remember how Aunt Elda and Aunt Min used to almost trample over each other to get to the one little broken mirror first, when they heard the forest rangers were coming. It was the only time during the summer that Aunt Min would comb her hair or wear shoes. I remember Arthur as a tow-headed, unpredictable little rascal, and Aunt Minna thin little Catherine Hepburn with long, wavy, flaming red hair. She didn't like cocoa and she wouldn't eat gravy with specks in. Aunt Elda looked like her daughter Lewin does, but darker hair and whiter skin. Something about her always made me feel that she could stand on a hill, and, like Coronado, look out across the Golden West and conquer it, if she really wanted to. Aunt Elda looked good on a horse, especially in her long tan riding skirt. Aunt Min looked real good, that is until she dismounted. Yes, I'm glad I'm old enough to remember many of the little things about the aunts and uncles. The little musings that have made our great big family so human, so real, so close. Each one of these personalities have grown to make a lasting mark on the lives of all who knew them. Our uncles have lived and worked in unity and harmony with each other such a long time, that we think of them as one, and often refer to them as the uncles instead of naming them as individual personalities. Surely we cousins must have been something just a little special to have been sent down to belong to this family.